The Gemara tells us that Gadol Kavod HaBrias Shadocha Lo Sveisha B'Torah. That Kavod HaBrias is such a big deal that it is able to overcome other principles Min HaTorah. So at first the Gemara doesn't really understand that, because we understand the pasuk in Mishlei. It tells us Ein Eitza V'Ein Chachma V'Ein Tfunu Neged Hashem. That when you're dealing with Kvod Shemayim, so there's no such thing. Let's say there's no such thing as Eitza, there's no such thing as Chachma, there's no Tfunu. Nothing really counts for anything when it's Mokum Chil Hashem. Mokum Chil Hashem Ein Cholkim Kavod L'Rav. There's no Kavod if it's up against the Kodesh Baruch Kineged Hashem. Nonetheless, the Gemara then comes up with this phrase that Kavod HaBrias is so wonderful, the human dignity is so chashuv, that it's docha losa shevetar, it pushes off a losa shevetar. So the Gemara asks, well, we just said that's not true. We just said that Kneged Hashem doesn't allow anything. So the Gemara says, hey, we don't really mean stam losa say, we mean one specific losa say. And that one specific losa say is losa say of losasar. That is, we discussed in the past, so losasar. At least the way the Rambam understands, Lo Sasser is the source for allowing Chazal to create new dinim. And basically, when the Gemara says Lo Sasser Shevetar, it really means this one specific Lo Sasser. It's trying to say that Kavod HaBrias is so powerful that it can push off dinim derabbanan. Parenthetically, it's a little bit of a question whether this Gemara is really a Raya for the Rambam, a Raya for the Ramban, how exactly you read it. The Gemara is maybe calling it an Asmachta. Maybe you can read this Gemara in a way that's going to support either one, so that's not our discussion for tonight. But in any case, that's how the Gemara understands this idea of Lo Sasei Shevetara, that no, it doesn't really mean that Kavod HaBrias can push off a biblical prohibition. It can't do that, that's what the Pasuk is saying, but it can push off a rabbinical prohibition. That's what we mean when we say Lo Sasei Shevetara. Then the Gemara says, actually, there is at least one case where it can push off a biblical concept, and that the Gemara calls Itzer Shevetara, calls actually Dover Shevetara, a monetary concept. But specifically, the real example that's given there is that of Shavas Aveda. That the Gemara says that even though there's a halacha that you're required to return property that you find, but there are exceptions. Gemara learns it out from Sukkim, V'Hisalamta, so Paimim Shatamis Alamehem. There are times when you may hide yourself from Shavas Aveda, right? The Torah says that it's inappropriate for you to find somebody's property wandering around than to hide yourself, pretend you don't see it, to bury your head in the newspaper. When you're on the train, you know, you don't bury your head in the newspaper, so you don't see people who need the seats. So too, the Torah says you're not supposed to hide yourself from seeing somebody's lost property. But then the Gemara says you can tell from where the pasuk is written that there are times when it is appropriate. There are times when you can release yourself from an obligation of Hashavas Aveda. And specifically, the Gemara says, Zakin Veinu Lufi Chavodo. That if you're a person who is a dignified person, you're the mayor from the Monopoly box with the top hat and the mustache and the monocle and the sash, and the only way for you to return the lost property is you got to go through the garbage dump under the trash cans and through the dirt, and by the time you get up, everything's going to be, your hat's going to be all smashed and your sash is going to be all ripped, and it's not going to be in keeping with who you are. So then you're not obligated to do it. So basically, the covet of the zakin is put up against Hashavas Aveda, and covet wins. There's a little bit of a discussion whether zakin is specifically a Talmud Chacham or not. There are a lot of tshuvas about this topic. The last couple of tshuvas in Chelek Aleph are the tshuvas pre-Yitzchak. Pre-Yitzchak was written by Reb Yitzchak Blaser, Bitzla Petterberger. It was one of the three most famous Talmidim of the Bishol Salanter. And in these tshuvas, he has a lot of discussions about the general issues behind Kavod HaBrias. He has a dialogue there between himself and Rav Tali Amsterdam. Rav Tali Amsterdam is one of the other two of the three top Talmidim. Sorry? Amsterdam Avenue is probably named for him. it's only appropriate right here next to the issues in Mitzvah Chana. The street itself is named after Rav Tali Amsterdam. And, of course, the third Talmud being St. Nicholas. There's a debate between Rav Tali Amsterdam and the Pre-Yitzchak about these different issues of Kavod HaBrias. What exactly constitutes Kavod HaBrias? What exactly is it objective? Is it subjective? A lot of issues, it's worth reading, a lot of issues that are behind this whole Kavod HaBrias topic are discussed there. And one thing they take up is this whole idea of Zalkin being in a Lufi Chvodo, does this mean specifically a Talmud Chacham, does it mean any type of Zalkin? All of that is discussed there. But in any case, this is what the Gemara says, that it's not only Dinim Derabbanan that fall to Kavod HaBrias, but also Hashavas Aveda, which the Gemara phrases in a more general sense of Davar Shabamamin, but I'm not sure what else is included within that category, but at least Hashavas Aveda. And then the Gemara gives a third example, that there is another category which actually is also biblical, is also Min HaTorah, and yet Kavod HaBrias can win over that also, and that is a category called Shevi Al Taisa. And Shevi Al Taisa, you know, it's a question a little bit, as we'll see what that means. We'll call it for now passive concepts, so Kavod HaBrias can win out over that also. So we see from the Gemara what emerges, that Kavod HaBrias is some kind of powerful force that overcomes at least three categories of halacha. Overcomes Dinim D'Rabbanan, it overcomes Hashavas Aveda, called Davar Shabamamin in the Gemara, and it overcomes Mitzvahs Min HaTorah of Shevi Al Taisa. Now, it's worth trying to figure out a little bit how that mechanism works. But before we do that, so to add to the list, we have these three categories, so we can add three more categories that are controversial. Three more categories that are not Muslim. The first three are all in the Gemara, and the next three are topics of debates in Rishon and Rachron. So the first one is the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos over there in Brachas. How do you deal with the following question? Now we know from the Gemara that there is another case that Kavod HaBrias will win out over, and that has to do with Tumas Kohen, that a Kohen is not supposed to be Metame for a Mace, but for a Mace Mitzvah, so he is Metame. So, and the assumption seems to be that there is kavod that is the operating factor there. The Or Sameach proves that it's not the mitzvah of kvur that's being doche, it's the kavod hameis. So how does that work? Tumas kodim does not fall into any of our categories. Tumas kodim is a lav min ha-torah. It's not the rabbanan, it's not sheva al-taisa, it's not mammon. So how is it that tumas kodim can fall to a mace mitzvah? So Rashi has one answer. Sorry?
Gemara Bava Metzia uses Tumas Bahanim as another example at Doka Hashavas Aveda.
Okay, so you're saying Kal V'chomer from Hashavas Aveda? No, but it doesn't work, it would come out the other way.
Alright, so.
So all the more so, you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, all the more so, it's mysterious. Alright, so in any case, so Rashi understands that this was an exception in Tumas Kohen always. It's not that Kavod HaBrias is overcoming Tumas Kohen. It says that was never part of the prohibition of Tumas Kohen. But Tosfos has a different angle. And Tosfos says, well, we have to basically add a new category. Because you see that Tumas Kohen is really different than other Isurim, because it's what we call a lav she'enu shavu l'kol. The phrase has a number of places that indicates a lav that doesn't apply to everyone equally. So that's at a little bit of a lower level. It doesn't have the same punch as a lav that applies to everyone. So Tumas Kohen only applies to male members of the priestly clan. That excludes a large chunk of Jewish adults. So therefore, it's very much a lav she'eino shavu l'kol. So what about Nazir? Right, Nazir also has a prohibition of Tumah, but that prohibition is suspended from Mace Mitzvah. So on the one hand, you might say, well, that's really not shavu l'kol. How many Nazirim do you know? But that's not the attitude we take. We take the attitude that Naziris really is Shavu L'Kol, because as anyone who ever applied to the Kolo knows, that everyone, a man or a woman, can be a Nazir. So even if they may not be a Nazir right now, they potentially have the ability to become a Nazir. So therefore, the Isurim of Nazir are considered to be Shavu L'Kol. So that's not the attitude, that's not the answer Tosfos gives to the Nazir question. But rather, Nazir is a weaker Isur for a different reason. Because it's Efshe B'Sheila. Because it can be undone by a Sheila's Chacham. So that sets aside from other Yisurim. A person has a strong desire to eat treif. He has no remedy that he can go to a chacham and get that Yisur canceled. The guy wants to wear shatnez. He's not going to be able to go to a chacham and get that taken off the list. So the fact that Naziris, the guy finds that Naziris is unlivable with, or he has some charata, some pesach, has some way of dealing with it, so the kohen is allowed, the chacham can undo it. So that shows you that it's also on a lower level. So basically, to sum up what Tosfos is saying, is that if you have a weaker Isser, whether it's weaker because it's Eina Shabu L'Kol, or it's weaker because it's Efshe B'Sheila, for whatever reason, but for some reason Nisr is weaker, so Kavod HaBrius will win out over that as well. And Rashi doesn't come to this because Rashi has a different explanation, so we have no reason necessarily to assume that Rashi would agree with this idea.
Is this
so,
the same thing for Nazir?
I don't know if he spells it out for Nazir. I assume that that's. I think he understands Tumas Kohanim. Maybe he does. I just don't remember. But he sees Tumas Kohanim as Tuma in general, Tumas Mace, where it's prohibited, as part of a whole category which has a exception carved out in it for Mace Mitzvah. So in any case, so we can add to this list now this first controversial category, the category of weaker Yisur. Tosa says Kavod HaBrius will win over weaker Yisur, and Rashi apparently, by implication, does not say that. The second controversial category has to do with the Yisur of Shogeg. There is a machlokus between the Rambam and the Rush as to how do we treat, or it's understood to be a machlokus between the Rambam and the Rush. We'll see the Rush has a couple of different hesberim to him, but it's probably a machlokus between the Rambam and the Rush. How do we understand the din to be if the aveira is being done b'shogeg? And this machlokus partially can be tied to girsas as well, because the Rambam and the Rush seem to have different girsas in the Gemara. The Gemara says, the same Gemara in Brachas says that if somebody is walking, he finds in his clothing that he's wearing shadness. And he all of a sudden he decides to look at his label and he sees 100% pure shadness. So then the Gemara says that poshto v'afilu b'shok. So he takes it off, even if he's walking around in public. So that's embarrassing. You know, it's not so b'chavadik to walk around without the garment. Even so, this is a chil Hashem, if you're walking around with 100% pure shadness. So chil Hashem, you have to take it off. Now, it is a little bit of a question whether the girsa should be motzi the big dough, or even if he finds it in somebody else's baggage. Because the Rush seems to understand it specifically the big dough. So let's say you're walking in the street, and your clothes are fine. Your clothes say 100% pure, not shotness. But the guy in front of you, your friend in front of you, you see on the back of his shirt, it says in big letters, the Great American Shotness Company. So what do you do about that? So are you allowed to say, listen, Shmuel, why don't you run home and call me from there? I got to tell you something. So it sounds like from the Rush that you can. But the Rambam seems to say no, that Zechul Hashem in public is walking around with this with this sign on his back, even though he didn't seem to have checked it beforehand, and therefore you have to rip it off right away. So it sounds like there is machlokas, the Rambam and the Rush, that even though normally Kavod HaBrius would not suspend a lav min ha-Torah, but perhaps that's mitigated somewhat if the aveira is being done b'shogeg. The Rush seems to allow some leniency if the aveira is being done b'shogeg, and the Rambam apparently is machmer in this. As I alluded to before, if you look in the Shagas Aryeh, you look in other Sfarim, there are alternative versions of what the Rush is saying. It could be the Rush is really dealing with the requirement to be mafresh somebody from Isser, and when it applies and when it doesn't apply. But at least then from one angle, it seems that they're arguing on this question, that if an aveira is being done b'shogeg, then do we perhaps mitigate the concept that says that Kavod HaBrius will not overcome a lav min ha-Torah? And if we say that if it's b'shogeg, then Kavod HaBrius does indeed win. And this is a topic that comes up a lot, halacha l'maaseh, it comes up a lot in Tshuvos. Rabbi Yehuda brings it into that famous discussion in his Tshuvos and Siman Lamed Hey in Aruch Chaim, where he talks about the guy who had an affair with his mother-in-law, and now he wants to do Tshuva, but he wants to know if he has to tell his father-in-law what happened or not, and which will result in him having to get divorced, and that would be a bizarion. So do we say that the Kavod HaBrius should allow him to not tell the father-in-law, who at the moment is a shogeg? So Rabbi Yehuda brings into that discussion this whole machlokus between the Rambam and the Rush, whether or not the aveira b'shogeg can be allowed, or can be at least tolerated for a little while, because of Kavod HaBrius considerations. It's also discussed, the Ramah seems to discuss, based on Trumas Hadeshin, that if you have a Kohen who's asleep in a house, and he's not wearing anything, and somebody dies in the house, that you don't have to necessarily say, quick, run out. You can just tell them, quick, get up and get dressed. It's time for shacharis. And then you say, ha, I'm just kidding, it's 2 in the morning. Somebody died. Haha. So, and then ask them to leave then. So that seems, that's based on Trumas Hadesh. And that seems to also come from this idea that maybe there's some leniency when they're very being done b'shogeg. But we should point out also that here we've already established that Tumas Kohanim has certain leniencies anyway, so it could be that that's also a play here. It's discussed in the Tshuva Sefer Yehoshua, so that's a little bit of a question, what is the operating factor here? But that element seems to be a play here also. So we could add this category to the list, again, controversial category number 2, averis that are done b'shogeg. That it seems like the rush would allow such averis to overcome, allow Kavod Abrius to allow such averis to be tolerated. Well, the Rambam would say no, even if it's b'shogeg, ain't eitz the ben chacham ve'ain tzvon l'neged Hashem. And the third controversial category, yeah.
Another
view is very long and complex. A lot of factors he brings in, but just in the context of the discussion, he brings in that. You should take a look. It's a very surprising how many different topics in halacha seem to somehow be relevant to this question. It's a huge tshuva. So the third controversial category is not so much machlokas rishon as machlokas achrona. The Divrei Chaim and his tshuva is also in the Lamed Hei. So he suggests a new category, but he does it in a way to try to explain one of the previous categories. So he wants to explain why is it that Dinim Drabbanan are suspended for Kavod Abrius. So his suggestion, we're going to suggest something a little bit different a little bit later, but his suggestion is that his problem is that how could we allow Kavod Abrius to overcome Dinim Drabbanan? Really, we should take the Gemara literally, and the Gemara which said, well, Kavod Abrius wins out over Losa Say, no, not a real Losa Say, just Dinim Drabbanan. Well, that's Taka problem. Aren't Dinim Drabbanan really prohibitions? Don't we really have a prohibition of Losa Say that backs up Dinim Drabbanan? So how could it be that Kavod Abrius is going to win over Dinim Drabbanan? Aren't they really Serm Daraisa? So the Divrei Chaim explains that, yeah, really Dinim Drabbanan are backed up by the authority of the Torah, but
The Sanzer, but
it's not spelled out in Chumash, so therefore it's not really a Bizayin, it's not really a Chil Hashem, because no one can open up their Chumash and say that this person is going against the Torah, because even though the Torah does back up Mitzvah Drabbanan, it's not spelled out anywhere in Chumash, so it's not really a Bizayin to the Torah.
You can answer the Ramban's kasha on the Rambam a bit, no?
You can answer what was that Gemara Zerai or not?
What's the difference between the rest of the Ramban, as far as
why we're able to make them?
Yeah.
Could be. But again, that gets into a whole different topic. But in any case, so the Divrei Chaim wants to suggest that that's why Dinim Drabbanan can be suspended for Kavod Abrius. And based on that, he wants to say another Chiddush. He wants to say that maybe anytime you have an Isser in the Torah, that is not spelled out, so Kavod Abrius can win out over that as well. And the Minchas Elazar discussed this idea. He thinks the Hezber is correct, but he doesn't agree with the Chiddush LaHalacha. And Maharish Engel discussed this in his Tshuvas also, and I think he does endorse his Chiddush LaHalacha, that if you have a non-spelled out issue in Chumash, then Kavod Abrius can Fidel Chivet. Sorry? Right, if it's not Beferish and Chumash, Chumash doesn't spell out. I'm sorry? No, the Maharash angle, Shmuel angle. So that is a possible third category.
That's even if it's Doraisa?
Yeah, that's what he's talking about. If even if it did Doraisa, so the fact that its authority is Minat Torah, but the words, you can't find the words in the Chumash, it's not spelled out, so therefore it's not really a Bizayin. And it's not a Chil Hashem, because no one can open up a Torah and say you're doing something against the Torah. Right, include anything which is not the Feirish. Right, I think I may have told the story in the past that I was once in England and I wanted to shave Friday afternoon, but I was apparently the only American person to ever visit England. So I couldn't find anywhere a transformer that would allow me to plug in my shaver without blowing up my grandmother's house. So I had to spend all Friday afternoon traveling around trying to find one. And I was trying to think, okay, would it be so terrible? I have some power left in my shaver. So maybe I should start shaving and see what happens. So as I was on the bus thinking about this, I was going over my notes on the topics. I saw that the Sefer Limudei Hashem is explained by some Achronim. How do you know that Kavod HaBrius could be docha a lav in the Torah that's not Beferish? Because the Rambam says that the Rambam holds that Avelus Yom Rishon is a Chiyuv in the Torah. And yet the Rambam says there's somebody in the middle of shaving, and he hears the middle, Shemes Lo Mace, he hears the middle that he's holding an Avelus, so he's allowed to finish shaving. So because it's such a bizoyin that he should walk around halfway shaven, that Kavod HaBrius can be docha that. Aye, but according to Rambam, it's a din in Torah. So what Hashem explains, another common quote, that since it's not spelled out in the Torah doesn't say anywhere, don't shave when you're in Avelus, so therefore Kavod HaBrius can win. So I took that as a Simim Shemayim that I should continue to get the Transformers for
plus. You get it?
Oh, I did, yeah. Much effort. So in any case, so that's the third controversial category. The third controversial category is, what about things that are not spelled out in the Feirish Nechamish? So the Kitzur, we have three categories that are in the Gemara already, three categories that everyone agrees upon, and three categories that are controversial. Weaker Isurim, Shogeg, and things not the Feirish Nechamish. So what is the Hadavar?
Weaker, number
critical. Weaker, Shogeg, not the Feirish. So what exactly is the Hezbir Hadav? So, I think we have to try to figure out, so what exactly is the mechanism by which Kavod HaBrius overwhelms Yisurim in the Torah? So on the one hand, the Gemara tells us that Ein Eitzim, Ein Chochma, Ein Tfunel Neged Hashem, right? So Kavod HaShemayim comes over everything. And yet we find the Gemara says, well, not really everything, there are certain things which Kavod HaBrius will defeat. So how does that work? How exactly does that operate? So L'chayr, one could explain through at least two different ways. First way, you could say that you have here pure and simple a values clash. That you have Kavod HaBrius. Kavod HaBrius is a din. Shechter points out that Kavod HaBrius is a din in the Torah. That the Medrash learns it out from the fact that a Kohen is metame for his krovim. That to Medrash, to emphasize that point, that we see that Kavod HaBrius is a powerful obligating force. So it's a concept min ha-Torah, it's a Torah value. And on the other hand, you have whatever halacha it's up against. So basically, any time you have a situation of Kavod HaBrius against the halacha, so you have a clash between two ideas. So it must be that, let's say there's a different ranking system. And so let's say an Isur min ha-Torah, that's a bizayon to Hashem, that's the worst thing. So that's a 10. And Kavod HaBrius is a 9. So Kavod HaBrius is not strong enough to allow a bizayon to Hashem. But a din d'rabbanan, that's a 6. An essay min ha-Torah, that's a 7. You know, davar shav mamon, that's a 7. So Kavod HaBrius is a 9, so it can win out over these things. It can't win out over a lav min ha-Torah, that's a 10, that's too strong. But a lot of other things it will win out over. So that's one possible approach. Basically, you have here a clash between different values, and Kavod HaBrius is a very powerful force. It can defeat a lot of things, but it can't defeat the Los Haseim and HaTorah. And Pasha, the reason that's the one exception is because that's Kvod Shamayim. And not just Kvod Shamayim, it's more than Kvod Shamayim, it's Bizoyin Shamayim when it's done. So to allow a Bizoyin to Hashem for the covet of the human being, so that far we're not ready to allow.
Hi. So this could be a very, very far-reaching idea of the fact that basically on business in general can't necessarily be compared because they might be on different levels. And therefore, let's say also the dim, like we talked about the Rama Shita in the Aleph Azbez that said, okay, it's by law, but according to this, a lot of them aren't the same. In other words, a lot of these things that we look at mitzvahs generally, a lot of the four levels sort of fall away.
Right, well, in general, you have a lot of issues like that. You have a lot of issues of trying to figure out. This is certainly how you rank different things is a huge topic. You know, on the one hand, the Gemara, the Mishnah says, no, obviously, you can't rank mitzvahs because mitzvahs, we don't know what your star is. But our general assumption is that by lavin is not true. The lavin we can rank. There are punishments the Torah gives, and we assume some punishments are more severe than others, so we do assume there is a certain insight given that we know that certain laban are more serious than other laban punishments, and we generally assume, although this is a little bit of a debate, that laven are more chamer than essen, although it's not 100% clear that way either. The Ramban by Beis Chalosa say sounds a little bit not that way. It's a lot to talk about, but the whole idea that there might be some way to rank them is not so radical in of itself. Okay, hi.
Hi. If I don't make a chol Hashem, but there's the Shem Shemayim is mechulal.
Right.
But somehow, is it definitely accepted that I have to rectify that situation?
That's a good question. Actually, that probably relates to what we're going to talk about in a little while.
I'm saying maybe it's possible to explain the machlokes the Rosh and the Rambam that way.
Well, as we mentioned, actually, that there are others who come at the Rosh from a different angle. The question is, how much are you obligated to step in when something else is going on? Right, there is a whole stream in Achronim to relate to the Rosh in that way, for sure. But in any case, so that's one angle, that's one approach. That maybe the idea is you have a values clash, and Kavod HaBrius is a very powerful value. It'll win out over a lot of things, but not everything. It won't win out over a bizoyan to Hashem. It won't win out over an avera done against Hashem. But it'll win out against a lot of other things. And the second possible hesber is different. The second possible hesber is the idea you find in Rashi and Shas. You find a little bit in the words of the Chasam Sofer on Shas, and that we'll start with Hashavas Aveda. That we know the Kavod HaBrius apparently is Docha Hashavas Aveda. That if a Zakin Ve'en Lefi Chavodo, so the Zakin doesn't have to return the lost property. So how does that operate? So the way some Rishonim and Achronim explain or hint at is that basically, yes, if I lose my wallet, so I have a right, I'll be halacha, to have somebody return it to me. That I have a right to have the person who finds it give it back to me. That's what the Torah says. But we also can assume with complete confidence that as much as I want my wallet back, so I am very concerned about the covet of my fellow Jews. And Kavod HaBrius, by the way, the Poskim point out, seems to extend to everyone. Kavod HaBrius is a humanity concept. That's why many Mefarshim understand Kavod comes from Salam Elokim. Salam Elokim is not a Jewish concept, it's a universal concept. And therefore, Kavod HaBrius extends to all of humanity. But I would not want somebody to be mevaz himself in order to return property. So therefore, we can say with confidence that as much as if I find somebody's wallet, I have an obligation to that person to return it to him, we can assume with confidence that if I would have to undergo a bizayon in order to do that, that he would be mochel on that right. So that's basically then a different type of hesber. That basically Kavod HaBrius works because we assume that the person who has a right to have the mitzvah done would be mochel that right in order to prevent bizayon from taking place. And then he's found the same hesber by Dirim D'Rabbanan, that there's a chiv to do mitzvah D'Rabbanan in order to show kavod to Chazal. But Chazal are mochel on their kavod in favor of the kavod of the individual. Now the problem is, if we take this hesber to its logical extension, it means that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is mochel on his kavod. Because we find that there are cases, min ha-Torah, where Kavod HaBrius is going to win, such as mitzvah saseh. So how could that be? What logic is there to saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mochel on his kavod? That if you want to say that I show kavod to people because they're created by Tzelem Elokim, so all kavod that I show to a human being goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's the point in passing over kavod that could be given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and giving it to a human being instead? But if I have an opportunity to show kavod to Hashem and I'm going to pass it up to show kavod to a human being, how does that make sense? If the whole point of showing kavod to a human being is by an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so why shouldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu always win? Well, this is a question you can ask in the Medrash. Medrash says in Parshas Balak that Bilam had this talking donkey, and that talking donkey would have been the greatest exhibit probably in the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum of Miracles. There you have a donkey that talks. It's a great exhibit, the Kvod Shamayim. And yet the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure the donkey was no longer around, because it was a gizayin to Bilam. He was outsmarted by his donkey. That was quite embarrassing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you see, is chad afilu al kvaitin shel rishayim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu worries even about the kavod of a rasha like Bilam. So as much as that's very inspiring, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu worries about the kavod of Bilam, the kavod of a rasha, but why would he pass up on an opportunity for his own kavod? That maybe, okay, we can understand that Minastam. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to protect the kavod even of Rishon. But when that kavod could have gone to him, it could have been a great display of Kavod Shamayim, so why should we prefer to give kavod to a human being, and especially that of a rush?
How much of a kasha is that really? It's not a mitzvah that people should see the donkey.
No, but I'm saying here's an opportunity for Kavod Shamayim, and it's passed up for a covet of human beings.
Well, maybe because of telling Elohim that is covet Shemayim.
Right, it is covet Shemayim, but isn't it more direct covet Shemayim to directly honor our Kodesh Baruch Hu?
Well, it's just one way of doing
it. Yeah, but you're basically choosing between the indirect way instead of the direct way. Why don't you do the direct way? Direct way should win. So, I think the Hezbollah might be as follows. There is an idea that Bali Musar talk about the Shiva. Musar talks about this, Rish Shafer discussed this in Drashas. The Shevet Musar, that you might call this idea the paradox of the Bala Gaiva. The Bala Gaiva kind of lives his life in a steer. Because, as Rabbi Shechter explained, he thinks he's the greatest person in the world. He doesn't hold from anyone else. He doesn't give any cup to anyone else. He doesn't think anyone else is important. But he's got to pretend for a minute like he does so that he can get covered from them. Because covered is totally meaningless if it's coming from somebody he don't respect. Right, so here the Baal Gaiva spends his whole life not thinking anybody means anything, but when he wants to get covered with them, he's got to then pretend that they do mean something. So that's the paradox the Baal Gaiva lives in, that he's got to suspend his own judgments of everyone else so that he can get what he wants, which is covet. So that's what's kind of a illogical life. One could suggest, by the way, that this is the beer in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Izehu mechubad ha-mechabed es abrios, who is it who gets covered? He who is mechabed others. So one could suggest that's not stam a midah k'neged midah kind of thing, that, oh, because you show covered for other people, so you get covered, it's all going to work out for you. But no, the only person who is shayach for him to get covered from anybody is somebody who generally is machshav other people. Because if you're machshav other people, you think other people are important, so then they could, in theory, be mechabed you. But if you're not mechabed anybody else, if you don't think anybody else counts for anything, so there isn't really anywhere to get covered from. Because you don't think anyone's opinion is at all important. So that's an interesting yisod in covet. That covet is, kind of paradoxically, it's built on mechilah. The more you give covet to the people lower, so the more it can trace back upstairs. But if there's no covet at the lower levels, so there's no covet to be given upwards. So therefore, even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be mochel covet to his creations, it makes sense, because by that his creations become mechubadim, and therefore they can respect him. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't care about his people, if he let his creations become non-mechubadic things, so then there wouldn't be as much of a source to give covet back to Shamayim. So it does make sense to take the indirect route, because that's the whole nature of covet. Covet builds itself. Real covet, genuine covet, builds itself by mechila.
According to your kasha, shouldn't that be the same thing? Why should a bein adam l'chaver be more important than a bein adam l'makom?
Yes and no, because bein adam l'chaver work on a little bit of a different. There are a little bit of different factors at play. Also, every bein adam l'chaver is also bein adam l'makom.
That's what I'm saying. So then, you can say that here also. That really, the covet of a chaver is really a covet of makom to that person.
So therefore, every covet of every ben
adam l'chaver is a covet of makom. So the same thing you would say there, that if
right. But I think before you came on to that point, you could still say, yeah, it is a covet of makom, but it's a better covet of makom to just be mechaber of makom. So why would I take the indirect road?
So do mitzvah makom that you do directly and not through.
Right. We always do that. We always do that. But the ben adam l'chaver, as much as it is a covet for Shemayim, it's indirect. So why would I choose the indirect route? That's what we're trying to explain. The reason we choose the indirect route, because that's an integral part of making sure there is direct covet. That direct covet can only come from people who are mechubadim themselves. So we have to also, at the same time as we want to give covet to Shemayim, we have to make sure that the creations are themselves mechubadim, so that covet can go back upstairs. Hi.
If that's the case, then how come
Well, Averis Mefresh Bekra. Right. So then the answer must be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to suspend a active covet he would get for covet of human beings, but we draw the line at a bizayon. That if you're going to disgrace the Kodesh Baruch, if you're going to do an Aveira in public, so that's not only an opportunity for cover that you're passing up, that's a direct disgrace, that's a Chil Hashem, so that much we can't allow. But that's where we draw the line. We're not going to allow Chil Hashem, but everything else other than an active Chil Hashem, we will allow.
Rabban Gaiva, whenever somebody else gets covered, so he's Makana that, because he doesn't think anybody else should get covered.
Right.
So...
which is the other thing that's an illusion, right? The three things that are illusions, covet and kinna and taiva. So all of them is seen as adam and olam. As the Bashakta once explained in a Chuvah Rasha, they're all based on illusions. That's the thing. So covet and kinna and taiva.
So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been mochel as covet in order to get covet, but he's allowing covet abrius before his covet in order to be mechanic.
Right, well, that's different from the... Right, of course, the Balgaiva's covet is all fake. That's why he's Mekane of people's covet. But the covet, we're talking about genuine covet, halachic covet, which is built on Mechila, that covet, for sure, you'd like seeing other people again. In any case, so basically what emerges here is we have two different ways of addressing this. On the one hand, we have the values clash way, which says, let's say, covet of Rias is, for example, a 9, and everything else is lower than that, except for a low cessation of Torah, which is a 10. Or our second approach was this whole mechila idea, that people are mochel, they're right, they're mochel their monetary rights, chazal are mochel their covet rights to keep mitzvahs rabbanon, and even HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be mochel opportunities for covet to him in order to support the covet of the individual. He just won't be mochel on active bizyonos. So, that affects all of our controversial issues. What were our controversial issues? The first controversial issue was Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, weaker Isurim. Do weaker Isurim fall to covet Abrius? So if you believe that it's a values clash, 9 versus 10, so then maybe you could make the case for Tosfos. Then maybe if the Avera is weakened, maybe it's not a 10 anymore. Maybe if it's a Lav Sheino Shavu Lakal, or it's Efshir B'She'ela, so maybe it's an 8. And if it's an 8, then Kavod Abrius could win. While Rashi will say no, that Kavod Abrius has nothing to do with counting up points, but basically it's that there's a process of Mechila in play for everything other than active Bizyonis, in other words, active Los Esses, and Tumas Kohanim is still an active Los Esses. So that can't be the Hesber, it's got to be a different Hesber. So this Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos probably flows out of this question also. What about our second controversial topic? So, shogeg. So, the machlokas, the Rambam and the Rush, as to whether or not an aver b'shogeg can be tolerated mishum kavod abrius. So once again, shogeg is also something that takes the bite out of yisurim. Shogeg is also something that makes yisurim less of an offense. So you could say that an aver b'natorah b'mezid is a 10, but b'shogeg it's a 6. Whatever, it needs a kapara, but it's not the same type of aver. It's a 6, it's a 5. So once again, so maybe Kavod Abrius could win out over an Averi B'shogeg if that's the Vort. But if the Vort is that we'll allow everything except the Echil Hashem, so the fact that it's being done B'shogeg doesn't mitigate all the Echil Hashem, it's still an Averi done that people can see. And therefore, that would be the position of the Rambam, so Kavod Abrius would not help with that either.
There's a Rambana finish that used to be Miyashav. Funny case in the Rambam, but the idea that Issachar have an Issa Chetza, but all Issa Rabbim is only Issa Gaba. So if you do an Issa Lab, so that the Shogeg, so there's no need for Kapara. So maybe the first two answers can work together a little bit on the Rambam.
And all Issa Labim are what?
Issa Gaba. And therefore, if you do the Shogeg, so there's no inherent Neshama Yan.
Okay, we have to think about that a little bit. But so then what about our third controversial category? So our third controversial category is things that are not befeirish and chumish. So if things are not befeirish and chumish, so can Kavod Abrius overcome that also? So l'chora, that should also be tolled. That if you believe that the whole idea is quantifying things, and Kavod Abrius is a 9, and biblical prohibitions are a 10, so it wouldn't make a difference whether it's spelled out or not spelled out. Even if they're not spelled out, they can still be prohibitions. So if there's still prohibitions, so it's not going to help that it's not Beferish Mekomish. So those who do not accept the Divrei Chaim's Kula, that things that are Beferish, they're not Beferish Mekomish, so Kavod Abrius wins, maybe that's the reason, because it's still just as much of a Los Tassation Torah, whether it's spelled out or it's not spelled out. But if you take the idea that Kavod Abrius can help against anything except active Bizyonis against the Kaddish Baruch Hu, so that aspect is helped by this, because that was Divrei Chaim's whole hesber, as he explained, that since it's not Beferish and Chumash, so it's not an active Bizayon. And that's the key element, that the fact that it's bound by a prohibition in HaTorah, okay, that's one thing, but that's not the factor that makes Los Tassation HaTorah win out of a Kavod Abrius. Rather, the factor is it's an active Bizayon, and that is reduced here because the Chumash does not contain the words prohibiting whatever the action is. So basically, that's what I want to suggest, that these two hesberim are useful in explaining all three of the controversial categories. Just quickly, because late, I'll mention a few other issues where these hesberim may also be the relevant issue. For example, there is a question in general. Every time you find the chiluk of Sheval Taiser Kumvase in Halacha, so you find the same question. You find the question here, and you find it also by Yesh Kok the Chacham Lakar Dovrim Atar B'Sheval Taiser. If you're learning Sufis and Gimel and Daftal, it's a big sugya, right? It's really Gemara Yivamis that Chazal have the ability to be Okir Dovrim Atar B'Sheval Taiser. And also, as we mentioned by Hamavazi Ali Vazi Yosh Mechomesh, that the Ramah says that you're obligated to spend only a fifth of your money to do a mitzvah, but you have to spend all of your money to prevent doing a Los Taseh. So these distinctions between either Sheval Taseh and Kumvaseh, or Aseh and Los Taseh, we find it by how much money you have to spend and whether or not Chazal can be Oker it, and we find it here also by Kavod Abrius, right? That's one of the categories where Kavod Abrius is going to win. So how do you define Shevi Al-Taisa? That's the question I'm asking in all these cases. Is Shevi Al-Taisa, does that mean passive behavior? That Kavod Abrius can allow you to sit back and not do something, but it can't allow you to do something that is prohibited? Is that the distinction, active or passive behavior? Or is the distinction los aseh or aseh? So that is probably the question here also. It probably also depends on which hesber you take. Because if you take the hesber that it's a matter of comparing values, Kavod Abrius is a 9 and a prohibition is a 10, so then the issue is chumra. What's more mach, what's more chumra? So the general assumption we mentioned before is that los aseh are more chumra than aseh. So maybe that's the idea, that Kavod Abrius is able to overcome an aseh, because that's not a 10, that's a 7. But a los aseh is a 10, so Kavod Abrius is not able to overcome that. But if you say the other hesber, that the whole idea is we'll allow anything except an act of bizayon against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so then the factor should be not whether it's so chomer or it's not so chomer, but whether it's active behaviorally or not. So anything that is an active behavior that's a problem, so Kavod Abrius will not win. But something that's passive, even if it's a los aseh, but it's done passively, so then Kavod Abrius perhaps may win out over that. Another issue, there is a Tosus and Shavuos and Avlamid. Tosus and Shavuos ask the question that the Gemara seems to say that a Talmud Chacham is required to testify before a Beis Din, even if the Beis Din is made up of Rabbanim who are less dignified than he is. So he apparently has to lower himself, so to speak. He's got to come and appear in kind of a subservient position. You know, in general, that's the way it works. You have Bezdin's always sitting, and the Edim are always standing. The Bezdin is judging even the Edim to a certain extent. So it's a little bit not b'chavadik for the Talmud Chacham to come testify in front of a Bezdin of Rabbanim who are lesser scholars than he is. Bezdin de Zutter Minei. Nonetheless, sounds like the Gemara has got to do it. So Tosfos says, why does he have to do it? What about his kavod? Shouldn't his kavod habrius allow him to not testify? And it would be passive, right? It would be Sheval Taisa. He'll just stay home and not testify. So the Gemara gives two answers. One answer is, he says, you have to know, Kavod Abrius is a very broad concept. You know, there's Kavod and there's Kavod. And there's Gnai, you know, the disgrace. There's Gnai and there's Gnai. So it's one level of Gnai. You guys don't have to run around with any clothes on. That's a disgrace. But for Tamar Chacham to show up at a Bezdin where the Dayanim are not as chashuv as he is, okay, you know, it's not exactly Lefi Chvodo, but it's certainly not the level of Bizayin that we're talking about in some of these other cases. So basically, Tosu says, you have different levels of Gnai. You have Gnai Karton and Gnai Gadol. So, Kavod HaBrius, that can tell you that you're not obligated to go through a Gnai Gadol just to be Mekayim Manaseh. But if it's a Gnai Karton, if it's, all right, a little bit of offense against your honor, but it's not really a disgrace, it's not humiliating for this Talmud Chacham to show up in this Bezin, it's just not 100% up to what he deserves, but it's not a disgrace, a Gnai Gadol. That's basically the first answer to Tosus. One of the answers to Tosus is that if it's a moderate Gnai, a smaller Gnai, then Kavod HaBrius will not suspend even the Aseh. And the other answer Tosus gives is, no, this is not an Aseh, it's a Los Aseh, because the assumption is that whatever point that will not be cleared up by this Talmud Chacham testifying, so somebody else will end up doing an Avera actively because this fact was not cleared up in court, and therefore this Talmud Chacham will bear the responsibility for the Lav that takes place. And therefore, that's like an Aveir B'Kum Vaseh. So these two answers in Tosus seem to also relate to our two possibilities. But if you believe that Kavod HaBrius wins by comparing values, and Kavod HaBrius is a 9, and then we were playing around with the other side of the equation, right? We said that Los Aseh's are really 10s, but things could knock it down. Eino Shavu L'Kol makes it an 8 or whatever, or Shogeg makes it a 6, or Drabbanan makes it a 5 or whatever it is. But what about the other side of the equation? What about the Kavod HaBrius? Is Kavod HaBrius always a 9? So maybe Tosfos is saying that sometimes it's not a 9. If Kavod HaBrius, if we're talking about a Gnai Karton, we're talking about only a little bit of an indignity, so then Kavod HaBrius is not such a strong force in that case, because we're not talking about such a humiliation. So maybe in such a case, Kavod HaBrius is not a 9, it's a 6. So it's a 6, it's not nothing, but if it's up against an Aseh, so then maybe the Aseh will be able to win. So maybe the answer in Tosfos that distinguishes between a Gnai Karton and a Gnai Gadol, so maybe that is working off of this value clash type of thinking. This is another one of the topics of the Tshuvas in the Priyitzchok, by the way, the whole question of whether or not this chiluk between Gnai Gadol and Gnai Karton is accepted or not. The other approach that says that, well, since someone else will be doing an Aveira actively, it's as if you're doing an Aveira actively, so that seems to focus on not so much Chumra V'Kula, but on the basic issue that we're trying to avoid any bizayin to Hashem. So if there's going to be a bizayin to Hashem, even if you're not going to be the one doing it, and you're not strictly speaking culpable, but there will be more bizayin to Hashem in the world because you don't come forward, so that's really what we're trying to avoid, and therefore your Kavod HaBrius is not going to overcome that. And in general, other types of issues, it's getting late, so we won't go into them, but other types of details, I basically go to the question, we're talking about Huchra and Tchuyah here. Are we saying that the issue that Kavod HaBrius overwhelms, is it completely gone? Maybe because there's a Mechila in play? Or is it just that it's there, but Kavod HaBrius overcomes it, because the values clash? That can have a couple of other afkaminas. Like, for example, let's say you have to do two Bittul Aseh's. So do we say that, well, maybe once, so Kavod HaBrius can win out, but two, it's going to start to add up already on the other side. The Note to Behuda, by the way, in his tshuva, the tshuva we mentioned before about whether or not you have to tell the father-in-law about his wife's affair. So one of the many factors that he includes over the course of this long tshuva is that even if you're going to tell me that Kavod HaBrius can allow this guy to live with his wife, it'd be one thing if we're talking about an Aveira once, but he's going to be doing this every day for the rest of their lives, so that's going to add up. That basically he seems to be saying that it's a value clash idea. So yeah, Kavod HaBrius may be powerful enough perhaps to win out over an Aveira happening once, but once it happens, it's going to be happening every day for the rest of their lives, so that's too much. That's going to add up. If you say it's a point in Mechila, so then it doesn't matter. It's not going to add up because 0 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0 is always going to be 0. So that idea, whether or not adding up the factors on the other side affects it, seems to also go to this values clash type of thinking, and that's probably relevant. That's probably relevant also. And a couple of other related issues, we're not going to go into them all because it's late, but that come out of this question, is it Hutra or is it Tchuya, which probably also ties back into our larger topic. So just to quickly chazus, we talked about the fact that Gemara says that Kavod HaBrius is a very powerful force, and according to the Gemara, it is Docha, Dinim D'Rabbanan, and Davar Shevamaman, and Sheve Al Taisa. And we found also three controversial categories, whether it's Wikri Storm, Lavshin Shabda Kol, or Efshe B'She'ela, if Kavod HaBrius can win out over that, Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, can Kavod HaBrius win out over Nevar B'Shogeg, Machlokes Rambam and the Rush, and can Kavod HaBrius win out over Averis Nap, Averis and Chumash, that's a Machlokes Devar Chaim and others. And we suggest that there's two different approaches. One approach that views Kavod HaBrius is basically a values clash idea. Kavod HaBrius is a powerful force that wins out over a lot of things, but not everything. And the other idea that we have a system of mechila here, that human beings are mochel the right to get back their property, and Chazal are mochel the right to have mitzvahs rabbanan observed, and even a Kadosh Baruch Hu is mochel his right to have kavod come to him through mitzvahs aseh. And we suggest that that's because kavod has this kind of complicated mechanism to it, that it builds itself on mechila, that the more kavod is given to the lower source, the more it goes back upstairs. So it makes sense, even for Kadosh Baruch Hu to be mochel on his kavod, as long as we're not talking about an active bizayon. So this then basically goes to the question, what is the ikar factor in whether Kavod HaBrius works or not? Is it a question of chumrah or kula, or is it a question of active versus passive, which could relate to the whole question Acharonim asked about the definition of Sheva al Taisa, and also could relate to two days in Tosus and Shavuos and Daf Lamed about Bezdin, the Zutter Mineh, about a Talmid Chacham testifying in front of a lower Bezdin? Is the reason that he has to do that because it's only a Gnai Katan, or is it because an Aveira will happen because he doesn't testify? That seems to also relate to our two possibilities. And then we also discussed other issues relate to the question of whether or not the Aveira or the Mitzvah, whatever it is so to speak, Kochur or Dechuyah. Do we say that there really is nothing involved in that Mitzvah going to be passed up on, or do we say that that no, there is something still there, just Kavod HaBrius is running out over it? So that also seemed to tie itself back to this initial question. Okay, we'll stop there, and next week, something else. That there is a pasuk in this week's parsha that, for a second, there's a pasuk in this week's parsha that Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, and he says, "Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai." Says, "I'm Yosef. So is my father still alive?" So the Medrash comments on that pasuk, "Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai." Oh wow! Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. You see, you have to be so scared from Din and from Tochacha, you see the brothers, they couldn't stand up to this Tochacha. So this is something the lady already discussed. What exactly, where's the Tochacha? No, he didn't say anything, he just says, "I am Yosef, where's the Tochacha?" So Rav Pan, the Chassadik Levrach, explained very beautifully the Beis Levi gives a different answer. But Rav Pan explains very beautifully that we know that the Gemara tells us that lost the Lavo, so Lost Lavo, there's going to be the Elyonim Lamata and Tachtonim Lamayla. That the people who are on top are going to be on the bottom, the people on the bottom are going to be on top. And because nowadays, the way the world works, not everything really goes based on merit. People are very chush in this world, they don't necessarily deserve to be so chush. And people who really work hard aren't necessarily so chush. So when things are going to work out, everything's going to be right, so then everything's going to be turned upside down. So what's the scariest thing? The scariest thing in the world, the most powerful musr, is you get a little glimpse of that. You get a little glimpse of what's going to happen. You're riding high in this world, you don't really deserve it, but you get a little glimpse of how ultimately things are going to be turned around. So that's the scariest thing, that's the most powerful musr. So these brothers, they sold their little brother Yosef into slavery. And he was nothing, and they used to make fun of him, and they used to tease him, and they sold him away. And now they say he's the king, or he's the Mishnah Lamalach, he's the second to the king. That's the scariest thing. The little kid who they used to make fun of, they used to step on, all of a sudden he's on top. That's a little bit of a glimmer of what's to come. That's very powerful Muslim. So it gives a tremendous priority to how much kavod you have to show to everybody, because who knows who's really on top. And this is something that Rakham also points out in other cages in the same drasha. That a few weeks ago, so we read after the story of Shechem and Dina, so Shimon and Levi are all infuriated, and they say, Kinevala asa, that what this guy did was a disgrace, it was a Nevala, that he should attack the daughter of Yaakov, that's a Nevala, Azachain lo yasa. Now you don't do something like that. So Beis Levi points out that there's kind of a tone change there, right? You know, yeah, it's a disgrace, it's horrible, and yeah, it's just not done. So, you know, which one is it? It's a horrible disgrace, or it's not the minig. So it's a big change in tone. So this, I think, the Beis Halevi explains, the Rambam quotes this, that the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that if you give a woman a bag of gold coins to watch, but you're a little nervous about telling her exactly what it is, so you say that it's silver, because you think that you'll be a little bit safer if you don't say exactly what it is. And then something happens, it gets stolen, so, and she accepted responsibility, so she's got to cover it, but she only has to cover, the Gemara says, she only has to cover as if it was silver coins. Because she never agreed to watch gold coins. She thought it was a bag of silver coins. So she said, okay, I'll watch the silver coins. So now, even though you locked out gold coins, but she only has to pay for silver coins because that's all she agreed to watch. But, the Gemara says, if she herself stole them or broke them on purpose, so then she's got to pay for gold coins. Why? Because it doesn't matter the fact she didn't know they were gold. She had no right to be damaging them. She was acting inappropriately. She had no right to do what she did. So it's not an excuse to say, well, I didn't realize they were gold. You had no right to be doing what you were doing anyway. So if she's acting legitimately, it's just something happened. All right, so she's only obligated as much as she accepted upon herself. But if she's acting inappropriately, she did something wrong, so then she's chayiv as if it is, as if she knew what it was. So that's what the brothers of Yaakov, that's what the sons of Yaakov are saying. That this is a terrible crime, this is a terrible nevala that he did to attack Bas Yaakov. Emphasize the fact that she, that they did such a thing to such a mishpacha, to such a chashiv person, so that's a terrible thing. Aye, but maybe they'll say, well, we didn't know who she was. We thought she was a stama girl. We didn't know she was so chashiv, she was such a miuchasis. So that's why the pasuk ends, v'chein lo yasa, you can't do that to anyone. That since it's a horrible behavior no matter who you're dealing with, so therefore you're held responsible for the entire value of the crime because you had no right to be behaving like that at all. If you were acting legitimately, so then you could say, well, I didn't know. I didn't know that she was so chashiv. But if you're acting illegitimately, you're doing something you have no right to do to anyone, so then it's not a defense to say, I didn't know the coins were gold, I didn't know she was a daughter of Yaakov. So again, this also hits the same point, that there's a basic cover that's due to every human being. And even if they're not the most chashiv, it's partially because you don't know who is ultimately going to be the most chashiv, but even beyond that, they didn't have covered their bris, that goes to everybody. Okay? Yeah.